time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end?
It's 1 o'clock at WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford Community College, the station making waves. It's time now for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Local news and alternative views from right here in Dearborn, Michigan. I'm your host, Jay Koronick, and joining me in the studio today is Dennis Reimars, our WHFR News Director. Welcome, Dennis. How are you doing today?
Very well, sir. How are you?
Very busy, I understand. You're helping with the one-act plays rather directly at Henry Ford here that'll be featured in a couple of weeks.
Well, about a month, right? Directly. Mm-hmm. Actually, my wife is directing one, and I'm her.
That's direct, yeah. So yeah. If you're the director, it's pretty direct.
Well, I'm her stage manager, which is a... more of a, it's a less front line position than I'm used to. It's very interesting working with her.
Yeah.
Well, typically in our relationship, she's far more organized, and the stage manager has to be organized in this particular context. So I'm learning a lot.
Yeah, and it's, you've involved yourself besides WHFR and the play now, also, of course, with the Mirror newspaper as their editor, continuing on through next year.
I am.
That's a great learning experience. And, I can say this because I'm extremely old. You're not right out of high school yourself.
Absolutely not.
And I think that's just the most wonderful thing that I've seen and experienced here at Henry Ford Community College is that we can really be a center for constant growth. Personal enrichment, of course, academic degrees and certificates and all that that's sometimes necessary for a job. But this such a wide range of activities here, cultural, artistic, creative, as well as academic, which also can be creative and exciting too. I think learning new information is one of the most exciting things to me. Things are always changing, and we need to stay up on that. Of course, I read a lot of books too,
yeah.
But don't take many classes myself. But that's the segue into my story about last Saturday here at the Henry Ford Community College campus at the Society of Manufacturing Engineers building, the SME building that we now own. And allow the SME a little space there to do their thing still. We are turning it into a conference center as well as an admissions and registration facility, which will those offices will move over there sometime next year, I believe, or later this year, perhaps.
Did you learn a lot at that?
Yes, this was a Sierra Club sponsored, in fact, it was joint regional Sierra Club in the Michigan area and Midwest area, and Canadian Sierra Clubs and other lobbyist groups from Ontario, all on the topic of the nuclear threat to the Great Lakes. And there's plenty. In fact, I would like to feature now the story from Metro Times this week. Kurt Guyette, their editor, was actually there and attended the whole part, and he expresses it so powerfully and succinctly that I would like to feature that too. And then I'll give some extra comments of my own, but here we go. Kurt Guyette says, as News Hits walked away, that's his little column, it's called News Hits, walked away from a weekend conference, that really just Saturday, focused on this region's nuclear issues, we weren't sure what should be worrying us the most. Is it the proposed underground repository in Ontario? These are storage facilities for not just spent fuel rods, but also all the radioactive material that is part of the waste of the plant. Many people may not know it's not just the radiation, but the radiation, besides embedding itself in all kinds of pipes and levers and facilities, so much so that people can't walk in those areas unless those radioactive pieces are taken out and put somewhere. And they're this is dangerous radioactivity. This is not just glow in the dark. There's no good kind.
No,
actually. But the metal even in these parts, besides the radiation level, so, well, just have them wear some radiation suits. Well, radiation suits won't protect you very long and from everything if the doses get high enough, as they know in Japan. These storage facilities even have to store steam generators and pipes that have become weakened. The radiation actually weakens the metal. It
right.
turns it into silly putty. No, not quite, but it weakens it. So
eventually it,
can't,
it might.
Yeah, it can't do its job anymore. That's how much radiation is constantly battering all the parts and pieces at the Bruce Power facility. Many people may not know that northeast corner of Lake Michigan in Ontario is 8 nuclear reactors, all provided by... So this is not directly across from Port Huron, but it's up further on the eastern side of Lake Huron.
Okay. Oh, you just said Lake Michigan, and I was trying
I'm
to...
sorry, Lake Huron.
Oh, Lake Huron, okay.
Yeah, that's why you're here, Dennis, is to correct my words.
Oh, boy, it's going to be a long day.
Plenty of them. Yeah, long hour. So I'm just saying is that this is part of even the Fermi plants in Monroe, which are only 24 miles away. Bruce Power across the lake is only about 30 miles away as the radiation flies.
Oh, geez.
Okay. And it's just a number of evils that and things that we haven't been told as the public, ever since the early nuclear days in the 50s when they first right. proposed the first Fermi plant. Anyway, all the storage pools, and they're open. They're water that's circulating constantly to keep these radioactive materials cool, and the water is a barrier to keep the radiation away from the air and the water and the people above ground.
Okay,
so they've got these exposed radiation pools at the Bruce Power facility, which are filled. There's no more space.
Right.
But they've got six functioning nuclear reactors. Count them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Whereas Fermi, there's one that's sealed, so-called. It hasn't even really been decommissioned because it's too hot to take
sure.
it apart. But it's not functioning. And Fermi 2 is functioning in Monroe. But Bruce Power has 6 of them still functioning and still creating all this radioactive waste and weakened metal that's also radioactive. And so they have a plan to dig down at Bruce Power and build a storage facility 600 feet below the surface
mm-hmm.
to transfer all these materials in canisters. The only trouble is they found, well, first of all, it's only a quarter mile from Lake Huron, and if it ever leaks and it gets in the water supply, there goes all of our water, all of our fresh water to drink from Port Huron, Detroit, all the way downstream. It's that hot. It's that contamination. It's that full of contamination, radioactive contamination. And they just discovered, even though they've had this plan for several years to dig down there and getting the final permits from Ontario to do this, because the pools are completely unprotected, like from nuclear terrorists, and they're all filled. So they got to put this stuff somewhere and keep it away from the rest of the world for, oh, about 30, 40,000 years.
So I'm sure Ontario's not thrilled about this either.
Well, the ground tests have shown that down 600 feet, it's not stable. Okay, it's not an earthquake problem like Japan is on several faults. We're on a minor fault, like only 4 point on the Richter scale kinds of earthquakes. But there's saline water contamination that far down, which means there's salt beds down there. Okay, it's not the water from the lake, but there's salt beds in this area they want to dig. And water. And so, oh, well, Bruce Power said, oh, that's okay. We'll just we'll put a couple pipes in to pump it out.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. You know, what's the first thing that corrodes metal cylinders?
Right.
Salt water.
Sure.
Yeah. So it's just the worst of all. And if they had to move this stuff out, there's only two shafts that are going to go down all that way. It would take months to get things not only in place, but also out if they had to move it somewhere else. And if any of these things are leaking, you know, it's probably going to be several at the same time. And 30,000 years, what did you do 30,000 years ago? There wasn't even civilization.
I don't remember what I had for breakfast. Listen, I know you're going to get back to that particular thing.
But that's just the nuclear repository issue.
Well, so this conference, I'm sorry, but this conference wasn't hypothetic, you know, there's a potential for, this is very real.
These are individual issues that the people that know have formed public interest groups, lobbyist groups, save the world groups, if you will. Thank you very much.
Right.
Because the government is just sort of giving, even in Canada, rubber stamps to proceeding ahead.
Okay.
Without considering the long-term, even present-term safety of the people.
Right.
And so these are activists, of course, Sierra Club Canada, but also several specific groups, including Clean Air Ontario, which is, a nonprofit group that's fighting this because, radiation can get into the air, too, and blow around. And you don't want to breathe that either. Let's go through the issues. The underground repository, is it going to be built or not? This is low and intermediate-level nuclear waste, but it's still going to kill you if it gets out.
Right.
Okay, this is not the hottest stuff.
So it won't kill you as quickly.
Right. And there's also a plan to ship that they had announced a couple, I think it was last year, ship radioactive boilers, steam generators, down, and six of them. Each one is 110 metric tons. I don't know the difference between a metric and a U.S. ton, but very heavy, very big. Six of them down the Detroit River and up the St. Lawrence, all the way across the Atlantic to Sweden, where there's the most radioactive repository of water in the world is the Baltic Sea.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go swimming there.
Sure.
Because there's plants that melt these things down and put the radioactive stuff in the water. And then they try to sell the iron, the steel back, or the somewhat compacted, reprocessed, low-level nuclear waste. They're going to ship it back to Ontario for storage. But in some cases, they're going to make steel girders out of it,
right?
Which are radioactive.
And it's been weakened.
Yeah, it's low-level radioactive. Sure. But you really want to have your building, your house, or your school built with radioactive steel. Mm-hmm. No, you don't. Of course not. Any doses, no matter how low, are not desirable,
right?
And will get you eventually, or your grandchildren eventually. And it's interesting to see, it's totally safe to ship these huge things. By the way, if these barges tip in or around the Detroit River, we'll have to cut off, they said, it's very clear, they're so radioactive, we'll have to cut off all intake water to Detroit and Windsor. And Dearborn, what do we drink? We drink Detroit River water after it's been processed. No way to process out the radiation. That's the end of our water supply in the whole southeast Michigan area. And as it flows down, it continues to contaminate. And they say, these barges, they're totally safe. Yeah, well, last year they were moving two generators, which were not radioactive yet, near Montreal. The barge tipped over.
Right.
And they're at the bottom of the St. Lawrence.
Right.
But they're not radioactive right now. They were new. So barges are safe? I don't think so. So there's an effort here not only to stop the underground repository, and by the way, the answer is an above-ground vault. That's the best answer if you got to store these things.
If you have to, sure.
If you have to, because you can get to them if they're leaking. You can check on them easily. You can move them around, but it's a huge mausoleum type.
Sure.
For the dead. But the radiation's not dead. And it should be above ground, not below ground, where weird stuff can happen and you're not aware of it until it's too late. And then, so we got to stop the steam generators, okay? And this is all in Kurt's second paragraph here in the Metro Times this week. Again, the story is called Godzilla and the Great Lakes, and I'll explain Godzilla in a second. He said, well, maybe it's the effort to build a new nuclear power plant down in Monroe, Fermi 3.
Right.
Detroit Edison is pushing, trying to get permits to build another plant at tens of billions of dollars of taxpayer money. It'll take 10 years to build, and it'll take 10 more years to commission. And simple fact is we don't need it.
Right.
We don't need the power. A little bit of energy reduction, you know, turning off the light switches more. And I mean, a little bit of energy reduction. We don't even need the plant, but they want to build a third plant down there. So we got to fight that. And all the people in Monroe, they want it.
They do.
1,000 more jobs. Well, they don't think long term. They don't know. The factories, it's totally safe. Yeah, well, like Fukushima is totally safe.
Right.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. And then, I didn't know this, there's a nuclear plant even closer. I knew there was a couple of nuclear plants just northeast of Toronto. There's three plants there, and Toronto's had all kinds of trouble with those, and they're so close that something goes wrong, there goes Toronto, too.
Right.
They're closer than Fermi is to Detroit.
Okay.
But Davis Bessie, one of the most troubled reactors in the United States, is just west of Sandusky on Lake Erie. And they want to get it relicensed. It's old, it's decrepit, it's leaking. There's safety containment shell ruptures that they're trying to cap, and they've been unsuccessful. Okay, no big release yet, but Davis Bessie is an accident ready to happen any second.
Right.
And they want to be licensed for another 20 years.
Huh.
And that's proceeding through. Why? Because in the U.S., the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the NRC, is the federal agency that does that. States don't have the rights to say yes or no. Even local people don't have the right to say yes or no, whether or not you're going to have a nuclear plant or have it relicensed. And they're all, the NRC is all filled with nuclear experts. And guess where they came from? The nuclear industry,
right,
previously. So they're the only experts we got, and they're the ones that say if it's safe or not, and they're the ones that have been bought and paid for already by the nuclear power industry. We have been, my conclusion is that we've been really sold a bunch of not just half-truths, but lies for 30 years about nuclear power. And anybody that says nuclear power is safe and clean doesn't look at the big picture or the disasters waiting to happen and the plants we already have.
This is technology that's, what you said, the 50s, has only been around for 60 years, right?
Right.
So, I mean, as this is going through, they're learning more.
But the technology of Fermi 1, the breeder reactor that nearly melted down, and I've got the book here, and I'm showing it to John. John G. Fuller's book, We Almost Lost Detroit, is still available somewhere. You can borrow my copy if you really need to. That came out in 1975. Frightening and True. And I remember 1966, it was October 5th, 1966. I was here. I lived in the area. I knew it was happening. They gave no evacuation notice because they realized the roads will clog instantly and nobody will get out anyway. So evacuation from a nuclear accident, especially since they put these plants right on a body of water.
Right.
You say, well, that just pumped the water in to cool the plants down. Yeah, well, that makes the lake radioactive. Okay. That's never smart, and it should never happen again, whether or not you expect a tsunami. Probably no tsunamis in Lake Erie. But
good bet.
It just because of evacuation plans, you only got roads north, south, and west, and out of Monroe. That's it. They'll all clog when the first 300 people decide to leave at the same time.
Right.
You know, so evacuation is never possible if a disaster happens. So, I mean, I've read the whole book several times. I've read the Detroit Edison, they were called that then, response, which was a 30-page essay entitled, We Didn't Almost Lose Detroit, which is supposedly a refutation of the book and the accident. It's just bogus. Of course we almost. The word almost is there. We came within two or three fuel rods not melting down out of a core of 50 or 60 that prevented a meltdown, which would have, enough meltdown happened, it closed the whole plant, and they can't even, you know, get the radioactive stuff out of there. It's going to be radioactive because it's plutonium, one of the worst things in the world, for 100,000 plus years half-life, and even more before you can go and touch anything. They just talk about half-life. It doesn't mean that it's safe after a half-life. It just means
just
that
a smaller
it
number.
Has half amount of radiation.
Sure.
So, well, it's just okay, here's Kurt Guyette. I'm going to stop babbling. The conference was held last Saturday, as we said, and attended by about 50 people. featured a handful of experts long engaged in battles with the nuclear industry. During one of the several PowerPoint presentations, a photo of Godzilla appeared on the screens placed around the room. Introduced to the world by Japanese filmmakers in the 50s, the monstrous mutant created by nuclear detonations served as a fitting metaphor for the horrors currently unfolding at the badly damaged Fukushima Daiichi reactors. And there's four there, if I'm not mistaken. And by the way, the update just from last week, Thursday, May 12th, nuclear meltdown. It's official at this one Fukushima plant. One of the reactors at the crippled Fukushima Daiichi power plant did suffer a nuclear meltdown, and they describe a pool of molten fuel at the bottom of the reactor's containment vessel. This is reactor number one. They went in there and they saw the top 5 feet or so of the cooling rods of the core's fuel rods, excuse me, not cooling rods, had been exposed to the air and melted down. So they didn't get enough water in there to prevent the meltdown. And they're worried that the molten pool of radioactive fuel may have burned a hole through the bottom of the containment vessel, causing water, this is radioactive water, to leak. And then, of course, even more radiation could cause other kinds of explosions. One of the explosions I didn't know about is that hydrogen gas is produced when these fuel rods get hot, okay? And they generate the temperature themselves and regenerate even more and more and more. And hydrogen gas is a byproduct, and it explodes. The few explosions they had at the Fukushima plants, and you see the destroyed shells,
right.
That wasn't the earthquake, that wasn't the tsunami. The plants were destroyed by these few hydrogen gas explosions coming from melting fuel rods and unregulated heat that was generated by them. And so it's only going to get worse there, folks. And they believe that we did not have an official meltdown, but we came really, really close, so close that they can't decommission, they can't move out the radiation at Fermi 1 for 100,000 years. We just hope the containment shell holds because it is extremely dangerous to all of us. Inside, plutonium is mixed with the liquid sodium that they use to cool the plant. The trouble with liquid sodium rather than just water is that when exposed to air, it'll become a gas cloud. It'll be a gas cloud laced with plutonium. It'll be a death cloud.
Right.
And since there was, on the night of October 5th, 1966, an inversion layer over the area of Detroit through Toledo, which means no wind at all, if that cloud was released that night, the next morning there'd be 20,000 deaths from Detroit to Toledo and to Ann Arbor. And then 200,000, 300,000 more would die in the next 2 weeks from the radiation that they got. And the whole area would have to been eventually evacuated, you know, people, dead bodies all over, and we couldn't have come back for 100,000 years. Nobody in Detroit, nobody in Toledo, nobody in Ann Arbor, and probably the water supply to Sandusky and Cleveland would have got contaminated, and those areas would have had to be evacuated also for 100,000 years, like the Chernobyl area. And there was updates on Chernobyl in Russia. Nobody can live there for about 50,000 years. It's all just totally radioactive. There's barriers. You can't go in there unless you're in a radiation suit for a few minutes.
So it's just left the way it was?
Yeah. All the tractors they used to try to burn the plant with soil, all the helicopters and jets that did flyovers to try to drop water,
right,
which was futile, and all 60 pilots died from getting irradiated from those efforts. All of those helicopters and planes are parked there too now, because they're all too radioactive to do anything with.
Okay.
They're just exposed. They're out there. It's a nuclear wasteland. That would have been Detroit, Toledo, and Ann Arbor, you know, area at least, and probably, because the water, you can't be drunk if Lake Erie gets contaminated, probably you wouldn't have anybody around living around the lake anymore, like even down to Cleveland.
Well, who would want to live here? Exactly.
I mean, you couldn't. You'd die rather quickly if you were in this area. And I've known this for years. The book is true, and Detroit Edison, now DTE, they can deny it all they want to, but that's the fact, Jack. That's what happened. And even the storage pools around Fermi 2 were almost filled, and they're unprotected, unguarded, exposed, these radioactive low-level intermediate waste pools. There's no vaults protecting them. There was, and I'm not into gloom and doom, although I was really bummed, as Kurt Guyette was, after Saturday. there was a program on History Channel called Prophets of Doom, and they had scientists, each one was picking, and there was a roundtable discussion with supplements for the 2 hours of the show, and you can get the DVD, folks, from Annie or History Channel. I think HistoryChannel.com has it, Prophets of Doom, and they have another one, Prophets of Doom, which is really all about meteors coming to the Earth, so make sure you get the right DVD here.
Yeah,
but
both.
Each expert said, oh, we're gonna run out of water, clean water to drink. That's what's going to be the first worldwide disaster to get us. And so all these six different things, they talked about them, presented the issues of which way we're going to die sooner as a planet. And
wow, what okay. a great Saturday
but
night.
The only nuclear discussion that was nuclear terrorism. It is so easy, and I won't give the information about how to do it, so easy for a terrorist to destroy Fermi 1 or destroy any of the radioactive exposed storage pools up at Bruce or down at Fermi, and contaminate huge areas for 100,000 years. I wouldn't give anybody any ideas, but these things need to be guarded. They need to be protected for at least 100,000 years, and we're not doing that now. And there's terrible danger from what's already there, not to mention these plants. They have a life, too. They're, you know, Davis-Besse should be decommissioned right now because it's at the end of its 40-year life and they can't do much with it. But, you know, new nuclear plants? No, we can't put any more out there. We're going to have these problems with the plants that we have now and their radioactive waste for another 100,000. Maybe some people say, well, just 30, 40,000 years. Excuse me, you go back and our civilization, our so-called civilization with writing and paintings, is only 30,000 years old. So we got a long time to go to figure out what the heck to do with and how to prevent the contamination, which is bound to happen. Accidents are bound to happen. Chernobyl happened. Fukushima happened. We're going to have a lot more. So my choice now, even after watching that wonderful presentation about how the world will end, if we don't end what currently is the nuclear energy production and start decommissioning and properly storing and guarding this stuff for another 100,000 or 40,000 years, I'll give you the low number there, this whole planet is in trouble because these plants are worldwide. Now, luckily, Michigan only has Fermi 2. We have the Palisades Park in around Benton Harbor,
right.
Palisades nuclear facility. It's still operating, too. Big River, which is northeast of Harbor Springs, northeast of Petoskey and Traverse City, that was decommissioned years ago, and that's a disaster waiting to happen, too, because they're not containing the stuff adequately. It's leaching, it's leaking, so Big River is still a danger. There's a great app for your iPhone about nuclear sites in the U.S.
Oh, no kidding.
And you can find out where you are on the map, and then you punch the area nearest to you that's flashing red, and you can get information about what the name of the plant is. So I didn't even know we had so many plants that were so close. I don't want to live in Illinois. Of all the states in the U.S., Illinois has 11 functioning nuclear plants. And which politician wants to keep them going? Barack Obama, he's from Illinois, and Rahm Emanuel, who is apparently bought and sold and on several boards of several nuclear energy plants, he's the new mayor of Chicago. So the people of Illinois, look out. You've got no chance to get your way, that is, your world, protected in the future because the nuclear industry and their politicians are in place there.
And it's made a decision is made on a federal level, you said.
Yeah, the NRC, right, too. Well, Vermont is trying to fight that. I think I mentioned this a couple shows ago,
yes.
That their legislator said no more extensions without our approval, and the Entergy nuclear company, which owns more than just this one plant in Vermont, they're fighting that in the courts now. They're saying no state can do that. You know, NRC has the only guideline, and they've already gotten the license extension for their plant in Vermont from the NRC. It's just that now the whole state and the legislature and the governor are fighting it on behalf of the people of the state of Vermont.
They're wise.
It's the right thing to do. I mean, this plant is at the end of its life. It needs to be decommissioned. We've still got those problems in the future. Okay, I'm not going to go in more. You can get the Metro Times. It's free, folks. Okay, I'm not plugging anything. We had presentations from Canadian Coalition for Nuclear Responsibility, Gordon Edwards, who has a PhD in math, and he at one point considered a career in the nuclear field. He gave the keynote, and that's available on sierraclub.com. They've got videos of all these presentations. Go to sierraclubmichigan.com.
I just have one question.
Mm-hmm.
How was lunch?
Hey, lunch was from Amani's. I guess I can plug them.
Sure.
Which is, and it was all vegetarian.
Excellent.
God bless them. And although a few people, of course, I was interested, even in this area, oh, what is that?
Right.
Can I eat that? Is there meat in that? No, it's vegetarian. Duh. You know, because they're not, if some people from, you know, outstate areas, they're not used to Arab food.
Sure.
Arab American food. And it's all great. I had
wonderful.
I had about 11 grape leaves.
With the rice.
Stuffed grape leaves.
Wonderful.
And the hummus, everything is great. It's one of the great Dearborn restaurants that feature Arabic food. And so, of course, we paid $25 for the conference, but that was for, I think, mostly for the food that I ate.
Was it all you
thank
could
you, everybody else. Yes, it was.
Oh, wow.
But that was pretty much everybody else's contribution to figure what I... But so food was great. I'm always interested in food, of course. But we had some of the greatest people from Ontario, activists have been working for years, also Beyond Nuclear, which is a U.S., anti-nuclear lobbyist group out of Washington, D.C. We had their number one, I think his name was Kevin Adams, lobbyist there. He was talking about Washington, D.C. trying to lobby against nuclear. And so it's too much information to share. Even Kurt Guyette couldn't share all of it. I'm showing Dennis the book on Chernobyl I got. I've got 4 pages of notes. And these are not people who are alarmists. These are people that have been working, studying. They've got the facts, okay? Not the facts that the nuclear industry will ever admit to, but they have facts that are the real facts. Here's the last one. I'm going to just round up this because we've taken half the hour now. But this is so important to put on your agenda as a way to, if we're not raptured tomorrow, May 21st.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
I'm sorry to remind you. And, of course, there's no basis to say except one guy thinks his idea is, according to the Bible, the rapture will happen 7,000 years after the flood. And we know how accurate it is dating that flood, right?
Sure, absolutely.
There's no anthropologist, geologist. And they think there was a large flooding in middle of the Black Sea area in Eastern Europe about 5 to 12,000 years ago, maybe after the last ice age receded, you know, all that water melting.
Right.
Created large floodplains.
Sure.
And in fact, maybe the Black Sea was created at that time. So there is evidence of massive flooding, at least in Eastern Europe, about 12,000 years ago. And maybe that was the Great Flood referred to in the Bible. Maybe it wasn't. But nobody can date exactly
If it's on a billboard, it's true. Well,
and now this gentleman is saying it's going to be 6 p.m. tomorrow, too.
It's
not just the day. But apparently they knew exactly when the flood happened 7,000 years ago to the hour.
That stinks. I had plans at 7.
Yeah. Well, and we want to say there's a great presentation from Vanguard Voices tomorrow night at 8 at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. That's HFCC Choral Group. They're premiering 6 new choral works at 8 o'clock. And the reserve tickets are only $12.08, and I don't think they're too much more if you get there in person. Huge facility. This is a 65-voice chorus. They're singing a cappella, but also accompanied by the Vanguard Brass, and also in the past they've had area symphony orchestras they performed with. So they are sponsored by, it's not Henry Ford Community College, even though G. Kevin Dewey, I always think the G stands for G Wiz, because he's a genius,
he
too,
is.
In vocal direction and composition, too. And I think one of the compositions are going to be his. Maybe not. No, it doesn't look like it this time. So 6 original choral pieces. Okay, this is amazing, these choral works that are still being written. And they're going to sing a few more traditional things by William Byrd, Giuseppe Verdi, and Ralph Vaughan Williams, too. They're going to have an accompanist, Jerry Ball, as well as the Vanguard Brass Ensemble that I've already mentioned. So, great thing to do. And so, if you're not raptured up tomorrow, maybe you can still save your soul for later by going to this presentation. And again, no evidence whatsoever, scientific of any sort, or even biblical evidence that it's going to happen tomorrow. So don't be worried about that. But this is fantastic debut of 6 new choral pieces from a composer in California, another one in Washington, D.C., one in Maryland, one from Switzerland, one from New York, and one from Texas were also submitted to this competition. But the one from California and one from Maryland were the ones that won the the premiere. And so this is just going to be fantastic, and I wish I could be there. I can't be. So somebody go in my place, please. Vanguard Voices at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center tomorrow night at 8 p.m., May 21st. Okay, finally, just wrapping up the nuclear issue. Again, New York Times, the paper of record of the United States, from Tuesday, May 17th, Japanese ignored or long hid nuclear risks. The nuclear power plant, lawyers argued, could not withstand the kind of major earthquake that the new seismic research now suggested was likely. If such a quake struck, electrical power could fail, along with backup generators, crippling the cooling system, the lawyers predicted. The reactors would then suffer a meltdown and start spewing radiation into the air and sea. Tens of thousands in the area would be forced to flee. Although the predictions sound eerily like the sequence of events at the Fukushima Daiichi plant following the March 11th earthquake this year and tsunami, the lawsuit was filed nearly a decade ago to shut down another plant, long considered the most dangerous one in Japan, not the one that's in meltdown right now, the Hamakoa Station. It was one of the several quixotic legal battles. Quixotic means you're poking at windmills that probably are not going to fall down, you know, from that.
Okay.
But so, in other words, it's a great battle. Don Quixote, okay, mm-hmm. That's Quixotic Quixote, who saw monsters that weren't there. So he charged the windmills thinking they were monsters attacking, and like the old medieval days, you're going after the enemies of society. And, of course, it was noble, but he didn't achieve his goal because, actually, there were no monsters. In this case...
Was that hallucinogens, though?
Yeah. Maybe. I read the book. Wonderful, wonderful, great novel. 1,000 pages long. Pathetic, in a way.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm so sorry for someone like that. But you don't want to believe that the people that are campaigning for the public good, whether it's Sierra Club or the anti-nuclear activists, they're all out for the public good in the long run, not short-term power. Ooh, turn on your electrical appliances, but keep us safe and secure way into the future, which we're not doing right now. So anyway, it's one of the battles that were lost there in Japan. It was a long attempt to improve nuclear safety and force Japan's power companies, nuclear regulators, and courts to confront the dangers posed by earthquakes and tsunamis on some of the world's most seismically active ground. The lawsuits reveal, according to the New York Times, a disturbing pattern in which operators underestimated or hid seismic dangers to avoid costly upgrades and keep operating. And the fact that virtually all these suits were unsuccessful reinforces the widespread belief in Japan that a culture of collusion, conspiracy, I'll call it, supporting nuclear power, including the government, colluding with them, conspiring with them, nuclear regulators and plant operators, extends to the courts as well. So the courts were complicit, paid off, bought, whatever.
Well, we can't say that, but the fact that it sounds like...
In Japan.
Right.
In Japan.
I mean, look at it here. It's a similar situation in regard to the federal government.
And we've got these court actions. It's not just protesters carrying signs. No. There's court actions from all these groups that are, pro bono lawyers are starting, and so far they haven't done much. Of course, that license renewal, thanks to the politicians of Vermont and the legislature and the governor there, they've started their own court action on behalf of the people, but it's just a court action. So, you know, who's in power? Who's in charge? The NRC is in charge. I think the federal regulatory powers will trump the state of Vermont, unfortunately. So far, though, you know, the government of in Colorado has prevented the nuclear storage facility there, the underground facility that was planned to store all the nuclear waste from all over the country, ship it there across roads at 8 miles an hour from all around. That's been held up and has now been, President Obama has actually said, we're not going to do that. That storage facility, again, the whole plan to do that was pretty much nixed by the people of Colorado, and God bless their politicians and their governor. And now Obama has said, too, yeah, that's not really going to work.
Right.
So we can't put all of our nuclear waste underground in Colorado. And therefore, in the future, there will be no way to live in Colorado when it all leaches and contaminates everything there and downstream. Remember the Colorado River, which provides water supply all the way for Phoenix, Tucson, Arizona, and Texas. Austin depends on it. Houston, Dallas depend on that fresh water. That would all be contaminated or radiated too if this facility underground starts leaching. And it will. It will. You know it will because nothing's perfect for 100,000 years.
Right.
Oh, okay.
It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. I got it.
I think the facts are there, folks. If you're not educated on this, you can read about how we almost lost Detroit, but why go backwards in time? Look at the current situation. Prevent these new things from continuing. Stop them now. Read Metro Times this week. Get a copy. It's essential reading. You can go online, metrotimes.com, and read it. The article by Kurt Guyette is called Godzilla and the Great Lakes, and it's a good summary, more than a cautionary tale. It's an absolute warning. All right, we're moving on with the journal. Here's a commentary from Jim Hightower. This time, he's commenting on something that's going on in Michigan. Maybe you caught it on Rachel Maddow's show on MSNBC. It's now known worldwide, just like the Governor Snyder's plans to take over school districts and cities whenever he feels like it, to undercut the will of the public there. That got covered nationally, too. These things are not to be proud of nationally. Here's Jim Hightower's comment about the witch hunts against university professors in Michigan and who's causing it.
Suddenly, from out of the blue, three professors at three different Michigan universities simultaneously received identical Freedom of Information demands for any and all of their emails that used certain words. The three are professors of labor studies, and the words in question were Scott Walker, the union-busting governor of Wisconsin, Madison, the capital city at the center of mass protests against Walker's assault on worker rights, and Rachel Maddow, the terrific TV talk show host who has covered the public rebellion against Walker. However, this odd demand for emails did not really come from out of the blue, but from out of far right field, specifically from a ferociously anti-union corporate front group called the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Peek behind the Mackinac curtain, and you'll find piles of right-wing money from the Koch brothers, the DeVos family, the Prince family, and the Waltons of Walmart. Now, guess who had also been major funders of Scott Walker's gubernatorial run last year? Yes, the Kochs, DeVos's, Prince's, and Waltons. Also, this year, the same plutocrats dispatched their network of front groups to help the governor push his attack on Wisconsin's public employees. So it's really no surprise to learn that the billionaire's Mackinac unit would now launch a chilling witch hunt on state university professors. Apparently, the Mackinackers were hoping to cherry-pick some tidbits from the emails to prove that professors of labor were using their public positions to advocate for labor, or even to promote a pro-labor political movement. This is Jim Hightower saying, as is usual with these supposedly nonpartisan right-wing fronts, Mackinac officials are now denying any political motives in what obviously is a crude McCarthyite attempt to intimidate and muzzle people whose opinions they don't like.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
This is the new WHFR Journal for May the 20th. 2011. Jay Kornick and Dennis Reimar is here with you. We're going to move to other stories that impact our area. Sometimes national, international stories like nuclear power and the nuclear threat is, it impacts all of us. So that's why we do wander sometimes up to a higher level, if you will. I think the important story in Dearborn, and maybe it's resolved already. It has to be resolved quickly. Story from last Sunday's Dearborn Press and Guide, 5/15/11. Dearborn won $60,000 from Arab Fest organizers for it to happen. Okay, and when is it scheduled to happen? They already picked a date for June?
7? No. Should be right on the
continues
front.
Continues page 8A. No, it's not on the front. We got to turn the page.
Really?
I always recommend turning the pages if you get a paper, folks, because the good stuff is usually in the back somewhere.
June 17th.
Okay.
Well, that's when a guest will be in town. He wanted to be here for that week. And so it's the weekend of the 17th, 18th, 19th, I believe.
Yeah. Chamber of Dearborn is saying, to be very, very honest, for the Chamber to come up right now and say, here's $60,000, not feasible, it's not possible, and I wouldn't be able to stand up here and commit that to you when I know I'm not going to be able to deliver. And I think that is a quote from, it says she there, but, Beydoun, okay. Okay. Well, anyway, a Michigan State University professor, oh, this is Bedouin, okay, says that the Arab Fest brings in $7 million and attracts 300,000 people over the entirety of the weekend. And, of course, there's support for that, but coming up with the money for public services at so late a juncture is impossible, says Faye Bedouin. Okay, Faye Bedouin is quoted here. She's the executive director of the festival organizing group, which is the Arab, the American Arab, they changed the order there, American Arab Chamber of Commerce. Okay, and she said, we got booths rented, sponsors lined up, and to move it this year would pose too many difficulties at this point. So I don't doubt that the equity issue that Mayor O'Reilly has issued for a while is important. And I think there's negotiations frantically going on behind the scenes. Of course, they lost some major sponsors like General Motors Chrysler. More recently, the sponsor replacements have been the FBI and the U.S. military. So the festival is being sponsored by the U.S. military and the FBI.
That is very troubling.
Well, the FBI wants to recruit, just like the CIA, Arab-speaking people.
Sure, don't
they go to international efforts?
When you go to a college, then, as opposed
same
to...
Same thing for the military. Military, you know, we go into Afghanistan and Iraq, and nobody knows how to speak the language.
Yeah.
That's really good for trying to get a democratic movement started in these areas, you know.
So you go up and down Warren Avenue instead?
What, are you supposed to hold up a sign that's been written for you by somebody else? Well, you know, seriously, yeah, they will, because they have their booths, you know.
Sure.
I don't know if they're going up and down the avenue, but they'll have their booths there, and they're putting money into it, not only so they have the booths, but also to make it happen. So it's very interesting, the U.S. government, military and FBI and probably CIA under the surface.
Well, we would never know that, though.
No, we never know that, is probably going to be there doing recruiting, but they're actually making it happen. Maybe they'll have to kick in some more money.
That's up to $60,000 more, I think.
Yeah, if that $7 million is really the benefit, I don't understand. I mean, who's benefiting from that $7 million? Those people benefiting should be able to pay up front some of that.
Sure.
You know, $60,000 divided by, you know, $70 million per person or per group, it can't be that much. I've never gone there because the crowds are so huge. I know would have to be bussed in. You can't easily drive close.
No.
But you could bicycle in if you're in East Dearborn, you know, and that.
You can always walk in, too.
And it's a lot of fun and well-organized. But, yes, there's a chance of protest issues. The local Christian group that got into trouble last year got arrested, but finally only had a minor guilty ruling from the courts.
Small fine, I think.
I can't remember exactly what it was, but and the police were pretty much exonerated in their behavior, although ACLU was concerned about their. Taking these people out of action there at the time. So there are always free speech issues that affect this. And but that's really minor compared to the great festival that it is. So however that works out, we're just reporting it, folks. If you want it to happen, let your city council person or the mayor know, email, phone calls. I'm sure that they're actually trying to make it happen somehow, but it is understandable that closing down Warren and then opening it after a festival of 300,000 people is going to take some cleanup, and the community has to pay for that. So what do you think? Okay, moving on down. Graduation, I guess, was a week ago Saturday here at Henry Ford Community College. And HFCC honored not only its graduates at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, but Representative John Dingell. He was the honoree this year.
Was so he?
After all those years of service, I'm glad he got some recognition. No, he's gotten a lot of recognition.
Absolutely, yes.
But we recognize him, too. Okay, this is kind of fun. Tim Skupik, editorial opinion in last Sunday's Press and Guide. Here we go. He talks about Virge Bonaro, who was on this show and interviewed when he was campaigning for the Democratic nomination for governor. And I'm reaching away from the microphone here to get my handy-dandy list of interviews. Virge Bonaro was interviewed on this show last June 13th. So June 6, 13, 10, if you want to go to our website, whfr.fm, click on the forum button. It's still there, that hour-long interview with Virge Bonaro. Who became the actual Democratic candidate for governor of Michigan, beaten by Rick Snyder, of course. rather badly. Yeah. But what's he doing these days? So,
I'm so glad you're bringing this up because I was curious.
Tim Skupik had this editorial. He says, the headline is, Angry Mayor Still Providing Soundbites. And here's Tim Skupik's comment. Every time Governor Rick Snyder is tossed a question that might make some controversial news, he tosses it right back at reporters with some non-newsy pablum like, we need to dialogue about that. Or, there again, this is the right thing to do. Unquote. And when that happens, says Skupik, as it always does, some scribes must dream about what it would be like to have, quote, the angriest mayor in America, Virge Bonaro, fielding the questions instead of Snyder. Bonaro lost to Snyder in the last general election, as we said. Exhibit A took place the other day in front of the state capitol building, where Bonaro wanted to have an office, be governor, instead of the one he still has across the street in Lansing City Hall. And that's true. Lansing City Hall is just directly across the street from the capitol. So every day he looks out of his window.
How depressing.
At the Capitol, at the governor's office there. Okay. He had just attended an American flag ceremony when correspondents pulled him aside for some questions about the guy who beat him. Will you join a lawsuit to challenge the governor's emergency manager bill? The bill allows the state to parachute into financially troubled schools and governments and take them over. Bonaro is not a big fan of emergency managers. Bonaro says, this is the kind of thing that happens in Russia. I jokingly said that he, Mr. Snyder, must have followed the advice of WWPD. He paused for effect as reporters wondered what the heck that was before he cranked up the patented Bonaro soundbite machine. And what it means is, what would Putin do? Of course, Putin is Russian Prime Minister Vladimir Putin. So it was vintage Bonaro. It's a line he used once on national TV, but he trots it out again for the local media, which consumes it hook, line, and sinker. Can you imagine Snyder crafting a pithy soundbite such as that? Not in a million years. Bonaro disappeared after his not-so-shocking loss to Snyder. After a trip to Italy with his aging father, he returned to the Lansing mayor's office in a reflective and uncharacteristic, toned-down mood. He said he was willing to work with the new governor, and when he thought Snyder was wrong, he would say so. And he has, says Tim Skupik. Bonaro doesn't much like the proposed cuts to state aid to the cities, as does, you know, Mayor O'Reilly here in Dearborn.
Sure.
And at one point contemplated forming a bus tour along with the other mayors to travel around the state griping about the governor's policies.
Hmm.
The Lansing mayor favors the governor's agenda of a consolidation of services, but knows local governments are loath to give up their turf. But he strongly disagrees on withholding revenue-sharing dollars at a time when local property tax collections, the lifeblood of local governments, have gone limp. When a series of Capitol Steps protests unfolded, there was Bonaro right in the thick of it all. And there's a big one tomorrow. The teachers, the MEA and the AFT, are going to go up in the afternoon. You're going to have lectures and presentations on the steps of the Capitol tomorrow afternoon in Lansing, approximately from 1 to 6 o'clock. I know the AFT, American Federation of Teachers Union, that Dearborn K-12 and Henry Ford Community College teachers are a part of, we're going to be there from 4 to 6. And I'm not sure I'm going to be able to make it, of course, but many others will. But, of course, you know, who's around the Capitol on Saturday, much less Friday? Nobody. They're all out of town. They're, you know, it's basically Monday through Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a part-time job now, except they call it full-time. And they're getting ready, since they passed Snyder's bills pretty much now. They're going to have a full 2 months off. Gee, sort of like teachers have 2 months off.
Mm-hmm.
We're always excoriated for having 2 months off. Anyway. Okay, so anyway, so Bonaro will probably be out there too. What the heck, is right across the street from his office.
That's worth it right there.
Yeah. Welcome to Lansing, he would shout out to the thousands of demonstrators. Then he'd launch into one soundbite after another that found its way into the evening news. Well, I haven't seen it, but maybe up in Lansing. Bonaro never had much of a chance to beat Snyder because his opponent, quote, ran a brilliant campaign, unquote, that was void of any hint of what Snyder might really do if he got elected. You never heard a peep, if you remember, folks, about taxing pensions or cutting cities, education, and so forth when he was running for governor. Not one. Just after his WWPD line, that is, what would Putin do, the feisty mayor, Bonaro, was asked, if the voters had known all that stuff, would you have won? He paused for a second and reflected longingly, maybe. Skupik concludes by saying, one poll suggested the answer is yes.
Well, yeah, the approval rating is going down yes, south.
Well, you never want to run and tell people what you're really going to do.
Well, not if it's like this.
Yeah, because then maybe they won't vote for you. Right. Whereas I would believe that's what you should do. You should not accept a politician unless they give specific answers. I know that some of the facts and details, economic, financial ones, will take more research.
Right.
And some of them you don't really find out. They're kind of semi-hidden until you become governor. But still, he knew where he was going to go. I know that. Tom Watkins, and we see his picture for the first time. And again, this is last Sunday's Press and Guide. Commenter, former head of the Michigan Education Department, who was sort of kicked out by Granholm. But he says, what happens under the Capitol Dome that is in Lansing impacts all of us. So that's another story you should read and find out about. He does mention, for those of you who are into the internet and doing research, a new great online magazine is called Dome, D-O-M-E, probably mm-hmm. referring to the Capitol Dome, mm-hmm. of the Capitol building. Unique in its content, quality, and audience, an e-magazine with a decidedly niche audience of movers and shakers. So all the policy leaders, the politicians in Lansing, the lobbyists, read Dome. I don't know if it's free or not. But by all means, even Jack Lessenberry writes for it. And Susan DeMoss, I don't know of her, but she's a Knight Foundation fellow and analyst for Michigan Information and Research Services. All kinds of people he lists in the article here. Former First Lady Paula Blanchard Stone. Did she remarry? Governor Blanchard's wife.
Well, no, when you remarry, you don't keep your married name and then your new
married middle name. But it's interesting. Maybe she, as a feminist,
flip-flopped
her maiden name Stone. As her last name and put Blanchard in as a middle name.
Very so, common now. Well,
interesting.
Not uncommon.
Uh-huh. Usually, if it's double, it's
right.
Your married name is still the last one, but you can do whatever you want to.
Heard more people, more women going to the mm-hmm. that particular route.
And as Tom says, and he concludes, an informed citizenry, that's you folks who are listening, and anybody you can talk to about this, is the best defense against tyranny. And there's been some very decided negative things taking us in that direction. And surprisingly, it's not Obama, okay? That's socialism, folks. There's a difference between dictatorship, totalitarianism, tyranny, and socialism. Even if you don't think you like socialism, it's still a democratic process that makes it happen, and it can be modified democratically. Tyranny, dictatorship, is when the public has no way to make a change. Okay? Oh, there's petitions against to recall Snyder, and yeah, you could vote him out of office in three more years, but means that ongoing, once you have these emergency managers in charge of your school district, you can't get rid of them. There's no political way that you can get rid of them until they feel they're done with you, after they do their damage or do their unrepresentative work. So Bonero is right. In fact, I went to a concert of one of the premier folk artist in Canada, Lynn Miles, in the Arc last Wednesday. And afterwards, I was talking to her. She said, our government in Canada, which reelected Stephen Harper, who is a conservative, you can't call him Republican, but very similar mm-hmm. to a Republican and has equally conservative agendas. She was afraid they're going to lose their health care under him. I hadn't heard that, but, it's a big plan. It's worked really well for decades in Canada, universal single-payer health care. But she says, the way he keeps going, the powers he keeps getting are clearly that of a tyrant.
Right.
The police actions they can do, or like Obama now has, if he wants to kill somebody for political reasons without trial, without sequestering, he can just say they deserve to die and send our forces to kill them. Excuse me? What would Putin do? The same thing. What would Stalin do? Yeah, the same thing. Anybody who wants to sequester, he wants to keep in prison forever or kill, if he says it, well, it's got to be good, and so just goes ahead and does it. And Canada has some very, very tricky, undemocratic police actions that are now legal there from the Prime Minister's office, and very dangerous. And even she, a folk singer, who doesn't sing about these issues in her songs, but she was concerned about that, as I'm sure many people in Canada are. And same thing, nuclear power. What sort of, it's a tyranny, it's totalitarianism, that one group nationally can tell us all how much we're going to glow in the dark in the future.
Oh,
Well, anyway, so pay attention. Those are great articles by Skupik and Tom Watkins, too. We have only 2 minutes left. We have to start saying bye-bye now. Did you see Joanne come in yet?
I thought I did, no. But
Dennis is watching the video monitor.
I am, but no, I didn't.
Not yet. Okay, well, concluding some other stories here, rounding up the new WHFR Journal, making waves, of course, oh yeah, for the day. Dearborn Farm Market starts next Friday. I'm going to be there doing the farm market report. I need some bread anyway, some really fresh bread.
Sure, and we're going to broadcast.
Yeah, in 2 weeks. That's 2 weeks really we're going to be out there broadcasting live. Hopefully there's no rain.
Right.
I think there's been enough rain. I hope so.
Hey, you know, the floods thing with the rapture.
I'm not sure we mentioned on the show before, but I think I did, that the federal high-speed rail money that Florida didn't want.
Right.
Will come to help upgrade the lines between Dearborn and Kalamazoo, and we hope all the way to Chicago.
Right.
So that's $200 million of federal money. Give jobs, give work, transportation, tourism, get people to Detroit, get them to Dearborn, certainly, since we're already going to be able to still proceed with our $28 million train station upgrade.
The complete hub, and they already upgraded the cars, I believe,
too. They've had a delay a little while in getting that ground broken for that because of documents and Environmental Protection Agency. DEQ, Department of Environmental Quality in Michigan. DEQ is going to, has to look at the lay of the land and give approval. But as we heard from Neil O'Reilly just a month or so ago when he came on the show, it's totally going ahead, and it should be done within a year and a half at most now, that new $28 million facility. But then we'll actually have some rail lines renovated, and commuter rail money that's talked about in Dearborn Press and Guide 518-11. Go to their website, pressandguide.com. The editorial is in favor of high-speed rail. Carl Levin, our senator from Michigan, is in favor of high-speed rail.
How can you not be, you know?
Well,
why isn't Florida?
Conservative Republican governor. Oh, we don't want federal money for anything.
Okay.
Okay, well, good for you. Then you can't get the benefits, and you won't have the jobs, and you won't have the transportation, and you won't be a showpiece for business and industry to come to you. Okay, fine. We'll take the money.
Well,
everybody
here.
Snyder was there when they introduced the money coming here. Everybody is for this money. So don't you be a naysayer about this. High-speed rail is less polluting than airplanes. Okay, less infrastructure investment. Easier to maintain down the road. Everything is good about trains compared to planes, even, and I'm not against planes per se right now for the time being, but we need this high-speed terrestrial transportation lines, even terrorist issues. Well, they can always blow up the lines. It's not as likely, easier to prevent than even airplanes, I think. And again, terrorism is not the problem. We kill, because of alcohol-related deaths, we kill 30,000 people a year on the highways. That's automobile transportation for you. Are trains safer than cars? Absolutely. Safer than planes? Absolutely.